7 things you don't really need to know, but probably should. I'm Jamie East, and this is the Sunday 7.
On this week's Sunday 7, we look into a Canter breakthrough in pill form, hear about predictive policing, inquire about exploding e-bikes, and get our teeth into new research on the effect of young blood on old mice. But first, on this day in 1996, NASA Administrator Daniel Goldin announced the discovery of potential primitive life on Mars. His announcement was based on the discovery of a fossil on a meteorite in Antarctica, which was believed to have originated on Mars over 3 billion years ago. There was good news this week on cancer, as what appears to be a major breakthrough was announced by scientists at a leading US hospital group. The team at the appropriately named City of Hope, who have a facility in Duarte, California, had developed a pill which targets solid tumours and acts like a focused version of chemotherapy. They've been working on the treatment for 2 decades, and the principle is to target a protein that is critical to the DNA that replicates tumours. The study, which was published in the journal Cell Chemical Biology, has shown promising results across breast, prostate, brain, and lung cancers. The next step is for a large-scale human clinical trial, and Senior Research Information Manager Dr. Rupal Mistry of Cancer Research UK says that the pill known as AOH1996 is very specific in how it targets cancer cells.
PCNA is involved in DNA replication, so when our cells replicate themselves to make more copies of themselves. But this molecule in particular is mutated, meaning there's an error in this molecule preventing it from doing its job. And this drug is targeting specifically in cancer cells, this mutated form, which makes it specific to cancer cells and leaves healthy cells unharmed.
The US researchers described the pill as acting like a snowstorm, shutting down an airline hub and preventing cancer cells from traveling through the system. Is that a reasonable explanation?
So it would stop cancer cells from being able to produce more copies of itself and then as a result dying. So yeah, that's exactly how it works, yeah.
A report by UK charity Electrical Safety First has called for e-bikes and e-scooters to be regulated like fireworks or heavy machinery because of the risk posed by their batteries. There have been plenty of stories of house fires started by battery explosions, and a New York e-bike store caught fire in June, killing 4 people as the smoke seeped into apartments above. New York City Fire Commissioner Laura Kavanagh says the issue is that when the batteries fail, they fail spectacularly, not just smouldering, but exploding. There was a hearing on e-bikes and scooters and the safety issues involved in the US last week, and one of the witnesses testifying was Matt Moore, the General and Policy Counsel for the People for Bikes Advocacy Group. He's on the line now. Hello, Matt. So how worried should we be about our e-bikes and scooters? Are battery-powered devices in the home dangerous?
Well, you know, I should go right to the usual answer you get from a lawyer that, you know, it depends. It depends on where you bought it and who made it. Reputable manufacturers of bicycles and e-bikes who've been supplying these products for years produce safe and tested e-bikes because they want to stay in business and their brand is important to them. On the other hand, if you bought your e-bike online from a company you never heard of, you have very little assurance that the product is safe or that the service, support, and parts for the product will be available. So I think your best strategy is buy from a local retailer in your community and buy a known brand.
What kind of regulations would you like to see implemented?
You know, electricity and batteries are pretty universal. So, you know, People for Bikes supports a harmonized international standards approach to regulating these products. Many of our member companies, you know, sell in Europe and in the United States. Those brands you've heard of, they should be able to sell products that, you know, and meet one set of standards that's accepted by a natural standards organization and been developed for that purpose, making sure that safe products are universally available.
Now, you've just attended a U.S. hearing on the issue. How did it go?
It went well. You know, we started off actually with some members of Congress, including Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer from our great state of New York, and they fully supported the efforts of the CPSC to make these products safer. As you know, we're experiencing many of the same issues in the United States that you're starting to see in the UK. they seemed uniformly supportive of what all of the hearing participants were recommending, that we need rules specifically directed at these lithium-ion batteries.
What should I look out for if I'm thinking about buying an e-bike or e-scooter online?
Every consumer product has risks attendant to it. A chainsaw is a dangerous product, whether it's gas-powered or powered by a battery. So you really need to educate yourself on the product, the safe uses, the manufacturer instructions, and follow those practices consistently. Charging overnight is a problem, or unattended charging, because a fire can start very quickly in a unsafe battery. So if you happen to have one of those, definitely you need to have the product under observation while you're charging it. The best approach would be to make sure you don't have that product in your home.
Still to come on the Sunday 7, we look at predictive policing and we find out more about the UK spaceport race. We've heard many warnings about AI, from its potential to replace jobs in newsrooms or on movie sets, to its application in assessing radiography and cancer detection. One area where AI and biometrics are moving at speed is policing, but it's not always easy to work out what's going on. In China, there are reports that visitors to the 19th Asian Games in the city of Hangzhou will face hotel rooms with biometric scanners and cameras instead of the traditional spy hole. The Met Police are moving to make more use of data and analytics too, the appointment last year of a chief scientific officer, Professor Lawrence Sherman, who's been applying data analytics to things like statistics on disciplinary charges against officers. He spoke to Times Radio recently about the power of predictive policing and how, by using data to track regular offenders, the Met can focus their efforts more efficiently.
With respect to the identification of people who are worth further investigation, there is also a very vague legal language about reasonable basis to proceed with an investigation. And I wouldn't say that anybody should be on a permanent list. This isn't even a list. It's a stacking ordering of the people who have shown up in the last 365 days. Every time we refresh the stack, we get a different ordering. And so we're not talking about putting any kind of permanent marker on anybody. What we're just going to be looking at today, who are the most dangerous people on the streets? What are the highest priorities that we can use for our best resources? Think of people like John Warboys, the taxi driver rapist, yeah, who was implicated in over 104 rapes. We'd like to stop that before it gets to be that
of
number.
Course.
Now, you might not be aware of it, but the UK is in the middle of a spaceport boom. The government is running a project called Pathfinder, which aims to set up spaceports at suitable locations across the UK. We already have Spaceport Cornwall and a plan for Spaceport Snowdonia, but there are also plans for four more in Scotland. And now the tiny Shetland Isle of Unst has entered the race for space. Debbie and Frank Strang bought the island, which is a former RAF radar station, 15 years ago, but the idea was to turn it into an ecotourism location. Now they're busy building a spaceport and hoping to be selected for a license. It all sounds a little bit Star Wars, but they explained to BBC Breakfast how it came about.
Never in my wildest dreams that I think we would be building a spaceport. It's all about geography and location, location, location. And it's really, we're the most northern tip of the United Kingdom. So when we launch, we're launching overseas. We've got a clear trajectory into the orbits that we're trying to get to. The airspace itself is very uncongested. So there's very little civilian air traffic flying overhead. Also, because of our location, we're 2.5 kilometres away from human houses, for human habitats. So it's a very safe location.
Still to come on the Sunday 7, Will Guyatt explains how NASA lost a spacecraft and we discover if young blood really is a thing.
Right after this.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about UnitedHealthcare coverage at UH1.com. That's UH1.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up.
You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Welcome back.
The search for eternal youth has consumed mankind for centuries. Is there some mysterious way to remain young, even as those around us fade away? It's given rise to plenty of mythology, including stories of vampires and their need to drink the blood of humans to keep from aging. But now new research, which looks at the blood of young mice, suggests there may be something in this after all. Researchers from a team at the Duke University School of Medicine have been conducting experiments using parabiosis. That's where they surgically connect two animals, joining young and old mice together so they share a bloodstream. The initial results showed long-term benefits for the older mice and helped to extend their lifespan. On the line to tell us more is Jim White, an assistant professor in medicine and assistant research professor in cell biology at Duke University. This really does sound like vampire mythology coming to life. So young blood can extend the life of mice by, what, 6 to 9%?
Yes, it's kind of the proof of concept that we can slow the aging process down. And it's a very complicated procedure, you know, switching blood circulations and having young blood exposed in the old mouse. But it shows really that the aging process isn't set in stone. We're able to manipulate it when we expose the old mouse or old individual to it to younger circulation.
It's not just simple blood transfusions, though, is it? Tell us more about parabiosis.
So that's the power of the parabiosis model. Although it's technically challenging, it has all the components of what we think are the important part of the parabiosis and the blood transfer, and that's bringing everything. That's bringing the cells, young cells, bringing the young factors, these proteins or metabolites, or even helping the old mouse kind of get rid of or metabolize the pro-aging factors that it might have. It has transfusions, a lot of times, or plasma transfusions, so you're just getting kind of a piece of this anti-aging component where the parabiosis has all of it. And I think that's why it's so robust, not only in our hands, but in other groups across the world over the last couple of decades have shown really powerful science when using this technique. So it has this complex kind of anti-aging cocktail to it.
Now, even after the mice were disconnected, the benefits continued. Is that right?
That is correct. And that was really probably one of the more surprising findings of the study. We anticipated beneficial effects with a longer-term parabiosis, that the design we used. But really, we were surprised on once they were detached for several months that the slowing of the biological age persisted. We've been terming it altering the trajectory of aging. So we've fooled the young mouse in thinking it's older. Instead of just defaulting immediately back to its chronological age, it almost reset itself to the age that it thought it was when it had this young circulation, and then it slowly aged from there. And several months later, still looked, at least at the molecular level, younger, which was really kind of exciting.
So does that limit the potential for application to human subjects?
Of course, this approach cannot be translated to humans. This is really the most basic proof of concept experiment that we can do. But the promising thing is there was an effect, right? That's the part of this experiment. We can do it. If we brought all this young blood and young cells and the old mouse just looked old and nothing happened, then you kind of end there. But there was the effect. So now the next step is why. Those things that I talked about, is it the new cells? Is it these young proteins coming over? That's the part that's now maybe beneficial to humans. And then can we drug these young proteins? Can we drug, is there cell therapies that we can use? So the promising thing is there's an effect. We slowed aging there. Now we just have to kind of bring the parts of why it worked so well, and then that's what we can use for human benefits.
Each week, the Smart 7's tech guru, Will Guyatt, joins us to get up to speed on one of the biggest stories in tech. Hey, Will. So red faces for NASA this week as they managed to lose a spacecraft. Tell us what happened.
Yeah, this has been one of these bad day in the office stories, and I've become absolutely fascinated with this. Now, it's been revealed this week, NASA's Voyager 2 probe, this was sent into space in 1977, so 46 years ago. It lost contact with the Earth after somebody accidentally sent the wrong text command to its ancient onboard computers.
I guess if it was launched in 1977, it was going to be a little bit of a technical nightmare, right?
This is interesting because it means that the dish is now pointed 2 degrees away from the Earth, and that makes an awful lot of difference when you're about 12.3 million miles or almost 20 million kilometers away from Earth. It's taking about 18 hours at the moment to send an instruction to this satellite, and it's a bit like texting your grandma, I would imagine, because this is technology from 1976. Now, it might be massively more technological than anything else you or I would have been able to buy at that time, but when you consider just sort of 7 years before that, the computer that took humans to the moon is now eclipsed by the iPhone, which is 80,000 times more powerful. You're dealing with some pretty basic stuff.
So the big question, can they get it back?
Well, they're hoping they can, and they've located what they call a heartbeat. Now, that's basically a signal this thing sends out a couple of times a day. And what they're now hoping is this means it's still alive, it's still working, the change of instruction didn't break it completely. And what they now hope is that there's a fail-safe that they've built into the system, and that should see the dish on this probe return to the correct position by late September. But until then, all they can do is pick up this heartbeat, which comes through, I think, once or twice a day, and they're going to just see if it's still operational. And that still seems to be working, so they're hoping it's okay.
Is there other elderly tech out there we should be worried about?
In terms of old tech everywhere, 8,000 pagers are being used in UK hospitals, dot matrix printers are being used in airports around the world, and one of my favourites, until just 5 years ago, the US military was using 8-inch floppy disks from the 1970s to power its nuclear missile system.
Now, when I say coral reef, you probably automatically think of Australia or New Zealand, but the world's third largest coral reef is actually off the coast of Florida. Things aren't going well for it, though. Florida is currently experiencing a marine heat wave with surface sea temperatures approaching 40 degrees. That's having a damaging effect on the delicate coral and impacting marine life in the area. Scientists have begun taking samples and placing them in temperature control tanks in a bid to save endangered species. Alex Newfield of the Coral Restoration Foundation says he is worried.
What we've seen in South Florida the last couple of weeks is a really intense heat wave that has brought a lot of really, really high ocean temperatures to the waters of the Florida Keys. And what that means for our coral reefs is that they're under a lot of stress, and they are beginning to bleach and in some places die en masse.
This has been the Sunday 7. Wherever you're listening, do us a favour and hit the follow button. We'll be back tomorrow at 7 a.m. with the regular Smart 7. Have a great rest of your weekend.
Written, produced and published by Daft Doris.
Hi, this is Kira from the Smart 7 Ireland edition. Just to let you know, we're pausing this podcast from Friday the 25th of August, but you can still get up to speed in just 7 minutes if you search the Smart 7 and catch up with our UK edition. Thanks for listening.